This episode of Earl Grey is brought to you by Audible.com, offering more than 180,000 titles for smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice and help Trek FM at the same time, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space, an international program of the nonprofit National Space Society. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter by visiting enterpriseinspace.org.
Hi, this is Marina Sirtis, Deanna Troi from Star Trek The Next Generation. You're listening to Trek FM.
Theo Greyhut.
Welcome, listeners, to another cup of Earl Grey, Trek FM's dedicated podcast to the next generation. I am your host, Amy Nelson, and joined with me today is the jubilant Joe Keegan and the jubial Joe Justin Ozer. Hi, guys.
Hi, Amy. I've never been described as jubilant before, so that's nice. Thank you.
You bring a lot of, you know, lightheartedness and
jubilation
comedy to our shows, so.
Yeah, jubilation.
Thanks.
Great joy and gratitude.
Great joy and jubilation.
Justin, how are you?
I'm doing well. So how did you describe me? Did you say I was also jubilant, or did I hear jovial or something else? I didn't quite catch that.
Oh, did I mess that up? Because I wanted jovial with Joe and jubilant with Justin.
I think you reversed it, but that's okay. Thank you. It's nice to be described, however.
Okay. Well, I wanted to use the J's because every time you guys introduce me, you have an A adjective to go with me. And so I had to come up with two.
Okay. You know, you're amazing. And I didn't even think that that starts with an A also. Oh. Just... Nice coincidence. Yeah. But yeah, doing well. Great to be here. Our second episode in a row, not being in person together, but you know, it'll happen again next year. You know what I realized, like just as we started recording this, I think this is my 100th episode of Earl Grey.
What?
Can you believe that?
288, yes.
Because the first one where I was a host was 189, which was 100.
Yes.
I know if you subtract it, it's not 100, but if you count them like, you should. It's 100. So 100 episodes. Wow, I can't believe that.
Yay. Well, congratulations.
Thank you.
Well, I should be counting, and I don't. Unfortunately, for our 100th, it was Richard, and it was Justin who reminded me it was our 100th, you know, when I was podcasting with Richard when we started.
And you're probably at something like 135 or something like that.
Okay, I'm glad someone's counting. I'm so terrible with anniversaries and remembering things. It just is not on my radar for some reason. So
it's okay. The time
to do that for
goes
us.
By.
I think it might be a big anniversary for me though. At the moment, I think it's maybe around about my 10th podcast. So it's like a major milestone in my podcasting career.
Yeah, your 10th podcast anniversary. Yeah.
Yes, exactly. That's what I was going to call it as well.
Yeah.
What else could you possibly call it? But congratulations, Joe. Great.
One step closer to being Amy Nelson.
That's what we all aspire to, right?
Yeah. Yeah, of course.
All right. Well, guys, listen. We have an iTunes giveaway. Just wanted to remind you listeners, it's still going on. You have till August 31st to get in your iTunes star rating and written review. Write us and let us know how we're doing, and then your name will be entered for a drawing of these wonderful Next Generation trading cards. They are just a wonderful gift donated by our excellent associate producer, Chris Tribuzio. And we will be having that drawing right after August 31st. So get your reviews in.
Yeah. And listeners, a final plea. So if you've been sitting there listening to Earl Grey, hearing us give these reminders about the iTunes star rating and written review and the possibility of getting these fantastic cards, and you haven't done it because you're not sure if you have the time, you listen to this podcast every week for an hour. Just pause it for a minute. Go over to iTunes if you can, if you haven't already given us a review. Go ahead and do that. Come back a few minutes later. We'll still be here. And you'll be entered into that contest. So, I mean, what could be better than that, right?
Yeah, we'll wait for you.
We'll be here. Yeah.
Well, we are all caught up on the Babel Conference. We had a nice long last week catching up on the feedback. So thank you for always commenting, listeners. We really do enjoy what you have to say about our episodes and the topics. So thank you. Well, this week we are going to talk about our top three villains of Next Generation. This idea came to us from Justin. And Justin,
yeah,
tell us how this came about, because I think this started before I knew.
Yeah, a little behind the scenes thing for listeners. So we intended on doing a different topic today that, because of some things beyond our control, we weren't able to do. And this happened to be a topic that I had thought of some months ago when Richard and I were going to do an episode when you were away, Amy, and that fell through or something happened with schedules. But I've kind of kept it as an idea. And when this other thing fell through literally a couple hours ago, I said, well, why don't we just do our favorite villains? And you guys seemed to like the idea. And I came up with my choices months ago, so it wasn't much work for me. But you guys had to scramble to come up with some choices. But I think, Amy, you were saying you had some fun putting this together, right?
I did. Joe, how did you enjoy thinking about the villains of Next Gen?
Yeah, I'm a bit like you, Amy. It was super fun, like scrambling around. And there's no end of choice when it comes to Star Trek TNG villains. There's a really good video on YouTube, and it's Captain Picard's like most inspirational speeches. It's basically just a montage of times he's come out and been this amazing actor that he is and given us some great lines. But most of them kind of circle around the protagonist of the week, who was the greatest villain. So there was lots of inspiration for me there. Wow. And I have the best three villains in all of TNG.
Oh.
I was wondering why you posted that video, because I'm like, these are inspirational speeches. I was getting all warm and fuzzy. I was like, what does that have to do with villains?
No, it's time. It's times when Captain Picard has had to be really inspirational to overcome the villainous nature of this week's protagonist.
Yeah, and I mean, all it required was you watching a YouTube video for your entire research, so that's not too bad.
Exactly. Well, I picked my top three before I watched the video. But the YouTube video was just good for watching Captain Picard give inspirational speeches.
Yes.
I felt empowered.
Yeah.
Yes.
I'm going to make this statement before we go to how we define a villain and what our choices are. I think my third choice is one that you guys definitely don't have on your list. So we'll see if that comes true, but I think it will.
We shall see, because I have one that I think for sure is not on your list.
Okay.
At least one.
Okay.
Yeah.
You guys don't have any of mine.
You're going all three.
Really?
For sure.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Well, we'll
see. Super unique.
I bet
we all have the same three.
I am 100% positive you guys do not have the third one on my list, because I thought of something. I thought of it in a different way for number three. Let's just say that.
Okay. Well, let's not keep the listeners in suspense, and let's get to our list. Now, when you gave us this topic, I was like, man, there's so many different types of villains that are portrayed on Next Gen. And so for me, when I was thinking about it, and the first ones that popped in my mind, it was very interesting, because most of them was a type where they were put in a situation that was out of their control. Mm-hmm. So it sort of was like they were placed there, they were created. Not to give away too much, but
I know what that means. I know one of them on your list, but go ahead.
Oh, okay. Yeah, knowing me. So that they were put in this, impossible situation. And so it's them working out. I feel, for me, that a villain needs to be complex. Like, we need to have their backstory, in part because we need to understand how important and it makes them a better worthy opponent for our hero, whoever that may be. I enjoy relating to the villain. And I know that sounds a little weird, but, you know, I think a villain is there to show us and point out some of our human flaws. And so if I can relate to a villain, to me, that makes it better, more powerful. And like I said, like, their fall has meaning when the hero overcomes. So I'm interested, Joe, how do you define a villain?
I was thinking about this. I did Google what the definition for villain, and just to give me an idea. I know what it means, obviously, but just to give me an idea about how I might define it. I think maybe a couple of things are important for defining a villain. You obviously can think of like a Bond villain, this stereotype of somebody that's just evil and wants to do harm to your heroes, or like Dick Dastardly. That cartoon character in the Wacky Races. But I think somebody that's villainous is maybe somebody that makes the viewer uncomfortable, or maybe tries to change, bring about change in the things that you feel are most familiar and the things that you feel are really comfortable. Because I think we all feel comfortable with normality and things being kind of uniform throughout life, and we can cope with little bits of change. But in TNG, there are a couple of times, and one of my villains comes in and tries to make too many changes, which makes me feel uncomfortable, and this guy really irritates me, so that's why I don't like him.
A lot of teasing going on at this here.
Lots of it, lots.
So if it's okay for me to go on to how I define a villain, I won't keep listeners in suspense too much before we get to our choices. But basically, you alluded to it, Joe, but I mean, the dictionary definition is like a character whose evil actions or motives are important to the plot. But when I think of like favorite or most interesting villains, it is someone that has some complexity. Like, you can see where they're coming from, or you can feel something for them. It's not just like, you know, they're pure evil and they should die. You know, there's something that's brought them to this point where they're opposing our heroes. So that's kind of how I thought of it. And I think my three choices are like that, because there are elements there that you feel like are relatable, or you can understand kind of where they're coming from in a way. Yeah.
All right. Those are all great definitions. So let's get to our first round. Joe, we're going to start with you, since you were teasing the most.
I don't know who to start with.
You have to choose.
Whoever is listed first in your list, just choose.
Okay, I'm going to start with the character, the villain that I was teasing when I was defining villains. Mm-hmm. So I think you maybe could have guessed who it is. From the episode Chain of Command, we have Captain Edward Jellicoe, who is...
Wait, that's not what I thought you were going to say.
Really? I was totally thinking Jellicoe. What are you, Justin?
Oh, you thought the Cardassian guy, didn't you?
Well,
the guy that was torturing Picard.
Yeah, but let's not go into that too much, because that may be my first choice. But go ahead with Jellicoe.
Oh, okay. So I find Jellicoe super irritating. There are a couple of issues I have with him.
Villain. Wait. I'm trying to wrap my head around this. He's a villain. He's someone... Okay, go ahead. I'm just... Yeah. You should know, Joe, we had a whole episode where me, Richard, and Kentrip from Standard Orbit were talking about that Jellicoe is a good character and is understandable and basically isn't a villain. But go ahead with your case.
Okay, that's fine. The three of you were wrong then. But that's fine. We're allowed to make mistakes in life. As long as you learn from those
mistakes. I'm
sorry,
I'm interrupting too much. You go ahead, I will.
Yeah, you are. This is going to be hell to edit, but it's not me that's editing, so it's fine. Yes, he is. Do you know what? We nearly lost Picard in that episode, and we nearly got lumped with Captain Edward Jellicoe, or as I like to call him, Jerky McJerkface. There's the issue with Deanna not wearing kind of standard Starfleet uniform. And I'm like, I thought, every time you watch that episode, I was like, how dare you? Who do you think you are coming into our home and kind of disrupting it so much? He is the captain. He's allowed and he's following Starfleet regulations, but it still irritates me. Because they've been together, what, Chain of Command is what, season six, seven?
Six.
So we've been together with this crew for 6 years now, and we've got this family relationship going on. So yeah, he's not allowed to come in and just tell people what to wear. He's very dismissive. These guys are the crew of the flagship of the Federation, and he's just really dismissive, especially to Riker, who basically does all the crew rotas and kind of organises the crew on behalf of the captain. He's really rude to Captain Picard before Captain Picard goes on his mission with Crusher and Worf. And was like, he says something like, oh, you're too easy on this crew. Something mm-hmm. like, you've been too easy on the crew, or I really thought the crew would be better than they are. Mm-hmm. Those aren't the words, but that's the gist of what he was saying. And I was like, yeah, you're just a horrible jerky McJerk face, and I don't like you. And you, by definition, are a villain, regardless of what Ken Tripp and Richard and Justin say.
Wow.
End of rant. Hashtag end of rant.
Okay.
No, but it fits exactly what you're saying. Like when someone comes in and changes too much, that really pushes you out of your comfort zone mm-hmm. and so can be perceived as a villain because yeah. you are nice and happy and warm in yes. your zone.
Joe, let me ask you this question.
Ugh, this is an adversarial question with your tone.
Yes, we can tell.
Well, I very much disagree. Like, we can agree to disagree. But is it not true that Jellicoe was able to accomplish the mission and Picard got back alive? True? So, like, is Jellicoe a villain just because he's changing stuff a lot? I would argue that he had to change those things in order for them to be ready for a war footing with the Cardassians. And it was exactly his plan, I think, throughout to get Picard back. But he couldn't reveal what that is, and he was able to do that with the mining of the ship at the end. So anyway, wow, I really didn't expect that, and I disagree a lot. But,
but I think it's just his attitude, maybe not his actions. His actions might have been fine, which kind of rubs me up the wrong way. Even the way he treats the Cardassians and keeps them waiting for so long in the observation lounge, it might be a diplomatic tactic. But it's rude.
I chalk it up to him knowing the Cardassians and what they will actually pay attention to. But we'll very much disagree on this. Okay.
See, if I was on the ship, I would have arranged an accidental kind of airlock malfunction by now.
Wow.
Here we go. Joe wanting to kill characters again.
Again. I know. Just him. For now.
Okay.
All right. So that is your first pick. Very good. Justin... it sounds like we might have a duplicate, so let's go with your first choice.
It's not a duplicate. It's from the same set of episodes, but it's not the same character.
Okay.
But we might as well get into that since we're talking about Chain of Command. Yeah. My choice is Gul Madred.
I have that one.
And sorry, Amy.
Oh.
But it was actually one of the first things that came up for a couple of reasons. I mean, first of all, He is very much a villain because he's in this situation. They've captured Picard, and he's torturing him, and he's making Picard's life a misery. But at the same time, going back to what I said, there is an interesting part in the episode where Madred is talking about how the military and their rule has been necessary because before, people were starving and things were terrible on Cardassia Prime, within the Cardassian Empire. So he has this motivation. It's not justified what he's doing by our standards, but he has something he's working from, like this is the way things are for our society, and this is how we've gotten to a place where we can feed our people, you know? And I think that Madrid is just played brilliantly by David Warner, and it's just a really great character that you learn to really hate because he's torturing Picard and trying to get him to believe something that isn't true, that there are five lights. But yeah, he was one of the first that came to mind because it's just like this, it's really concentrated within that episode in the second part where he's really playing mind games and manipulating Picard. But at the same time, like, he has this complexity to him because, as I said, he has this justification for wanting to do what he thinks is best for his people. And he even brings his daughter in and he's like, she should know how things are. And he loves his daughter and all of that. So there's this interesting complexity, and I like that in a villain. So that was my choice.
Well, this was my choice as well. So we do have a duplicate, you know, and I absolutely agree with everything you said and feel that he is so complex. Like, we get his backstory. We get why he believes what he is doing is right. We get, you know, like you said, the starvation of his people. Like, he loves his people. And he thinks he's doing what's best. I mean, he brings in his daughter to show her the truth and the reality of the world. He's not wanting to hide anything. Like, he's a family man. And unfortunately, he believes in torture. And he's all about this misinformation and deceit. And, you know, there are five lights. Like, and he has this desk job. And I point those things out because it's all things opposite to Picard. And I think that's what makes him such a good villain, opposite Picard, yeah. Because, you know, Picard doesn't have a family. He doesn't have any children, you know, and here Golmadred is bringing in his daughter. And, you know, Picard's out on the Enterprise. He's not sitting behind a desk. He obviously does not believe in torture. And Picard is always standing up for truth and what's right. And so Golmadred, here he is, just this exact opposite of Picard. And how wonderful they play off each other. I thought this was a great villain in Next Gen.
Yeah, and I want to add something. Sorry, Joe, before we get to what you think. So what I really like about seeing a complex villain like that is it makes me think, like, is there something that's innate to someone that can make them take these terrible, harmful actions? Or is it because of the society they live in, how they've raised all of their experiences? Because it makes me think, like, if I were born a Cardassian within this society and taught what Madrid was and all of that, might I turn out to be like him? Or is there something like innate within yourself that would resist that or would be different? So I like that Star Trek gets us to think about those difficult questions.
Joe, what do you think about Golmadred?
Yeah, good choice. Good obvious choice. Yeah. Jellicoe is like nuanced and not an obvious.
Are you saying Jellicoe is more of a villain than Madrid?
Not in the slightest.
Okay.
Yeah.
Making sure.
It's interesting, Madrid is maybe made more villainous by the fact that it appears he's kind of doing it off book and the rest of the Cardassian government don't appear to know that he's...
Right, there's this scene at the end where they're like, why is he still here? Why are you still doing this?
Which...
It's personal.
Amy, I agree with you. We see his backstory, and I think that's something about Star Trek TNG TV episodes where they do a really good job of making the villains more three-dimensional and fully formed very quickly over the 45 minutes that we see them for. On the question of nature and nurture, I kind of fall on the side of nurture, that good people can end up doing evil acts because of the situations that they're put in. And because of all their experiences and how they've been led to do that, and they can justify it, but from an external point, it might seem that they are being evil.
Mm-hmm. Well, I think that we are going to continue this discussion with another villain. So let's jump to, Joe, your second pick for a villain.
I'm going to choose the parasitic race from Conspiracy.
Okay.
Not really because of anything they did in the episode. I know they took over the humans and they became super strong and they wanted to take over the Federation.
And a Vulcan too.
Well, humanoid species. it's because of the end of the episode where Data says that they managed to send out a signal to deep space to the other side of the galaxy. Mm-hmm. And then the episode closes with what sounds like an old style radio Morse code broadcast out into like the depth of space with a nebula in the background. It's like, and it was just super creepy and super eerie. And I know Gene Roddenberry conceived the episode, but didn't like the way it was shown. He thought it wasn't quite in the kind of positive future of humanity.
Well, he didn't actually write it or conceive it. I think what I remember is that he had some issues initially because there was going to be, I forget, but there was a way they were going to do it originally he didn't like, so they changed it. He actually encouraged them to make it really gory at the end to push the boundaries for some reason. And it is super gory for Star Trek.
It is, yeah. Interestingly, BBC in the UK showed it, showed Star Trek over here and just after it was initially broadcast in the States. And the BBC banned that episode.
I thought they just edited out the gorier parts of it, no?
No, really? They banned it then when it was shown on Sky TV, which is our kind of satellite TV provider over here. They edited out the gory parts, but it was initially banned in the UK.
Wow.
Which kind of, if you're used to watching Star Trek, nothing is that gory in Star Trek up to that point.
Up to that point, probably not, yeah. It's kind of shocking.
No, that was gory, yeah.
But, Joe, that's a really great choice. It was actually on my longer list for the Conspiracy Parasites. It's a great episode. They're really creepy. I think the part that you were talking about where they're sending out a message, originally it was supposed to be part of an arc with the Borg, and the Borg had been controlling them, and the Borg were actually insectoid kind of species, but that didn't pan out. But yeah, I think it's a... it's a really great choice. It is a villain where you don't, within the episode, actually know what their motivation is or what the heck is going on.
No.
But
you want to see more.
You want to see more.
That's the thing. I want to see what happened when they eventually made it to Federation space.
Well, there is a follow-up in the novels, Joe.
Oh, you and your novels.
Have you read any Star Trek novels or no?
By far my favorite Star Trek novels was an anthology. There was four novels in one big giant tome of a book. It was TOS, TNG, DS9, and Voyager. And
was that Invasion?
Yes, I love it.
That's a good one.
I read it when I was getting the train to uni every day, and I read it alongside listening to a weird kind of pop rock CD. It was like best rock songs in the world ever kind of thing. So anytime I hear these songs, I'm taken back to feeling the way I did when reading the novels.
Interesting. Are those the only ones you've read?
Oh, no, I've read a few. I've read a few of the audiobooks. The problem with... I've listened to Star Trek audiobooks. The problem I find with Star Trek audiobooks is they're mostly really abridged.
That's how it used to be. That's not how it is anymore.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, they used to be abridged because there was a limited amount of space you might have on a tape or CD at the time.
A tape?
But now...
What is that?
Well, it's this thing that audio used to be heard on. But yeah, like they had a limited space, and so they had to abridge it way back when, especially like 80s and 90s. But now they do audiobooks for all the new Star Trek novels that come out, and they're unabridged. I mean, it's like, you know, 15 hours long, but they're unabridged.
Nice.
There are new Star Trek books coming out now. You should get the audiobooks for them. Anyway.
But there's so many podcasts to listen to. That's my problem.
There's that
and
too.
So much news to listen to. So yeah, a 15-hour audiobook is a week of listening for me, generally.
Well,
that's
bad.
Good.
Wow. But anyway, getting back to it, in case listeners want to check it out, the follow-up is the DS9 novel Unity.
All right, Justin, give us your second pick.
Well, I wasn't sure who would get to this because it is obvious, but I love them as a villain, and it's the Borg. So, which you could see almost as like the quintessential villain when people think about TNG. And I mean, they are in various episodes in TNG and Voyager and Enterprise. Going to be in Picard too. So they've been like all across Star Trek. But I think what makes the Borg a really great villain is that, you know, unlike some of these other ones we talk about where it's an individual person, it's this whole like collective of billions and trillions of individuals that are your enemy. When I think about that, I mean, that's kind of a frightening thing. But at the same time, you know, starting with something like iBorg, you got the sense like there are people inside of these Borg. So there is some like suffering that happened because these people of different species were assimilated, and you know, if they can be liberated like Hugh was or like Seven was, you know, they could actually live out regular lives and not be so villainous. So I think like over the course of what we've seen of the Borg, I think it's been quite interesting because they're frightening, but also there's something that's relatable or understandable because all of these Borg at one level or another are really victims of the circumstance and can't control their actions. So anyway, I had to choose that because if one of us didn't choose the Borg, someone would be like, why didn't you choose the Borg?
No, that is a great pick. I was obviously thinking about them. And when I think of the Borg, I always remember when Michael Piller wrote Best of Both Worlds, you know, yeah. Part one. And then he's like, well, I'm not coming back, so I'm going to write this impossible situation. And oh boy, was it impossible, you know? And so that, you know, is warm and fuzzy to my heart because the Borg really do have a special place in my heart because of how villainous they are and how they were treated in Next Gen and, you know, just this unconquerable and how are we going to defeat them? And, you know, bringing in individuality into a collective. Just a brilliant idea that I think works so well. Joe, what do you think about the Borg?
I think I didn't pick it, I think, because we've got so much more information about the Borg now because of what happened in Voyager. And I think Voyager diminished the Borg to such an extent that they became kind of unvillainous or non-villainous because Voyager went up against multiple cubes and kind of dealt with them kind of fairly easily a lot of the time.
I don't agree with that, but
so
yeah.
Well, yeah, I have heard that criticism too. And now watching, you know, some Voyager Borg, I still feel like they keep the main tenets of what was started in Next Gen, but yeah, they're going to run into them more because they are literally in the Delta Quadrant and trying to go through their space. And granted, I don't recall every single Borg episode, but I still think that they're scary, and I think Janeway had to deal with the same issues that Picard did.
Mm. I think they're definitely, at that point, they're more scary when you first meet them because yes. They're more unknown.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah.
And the more information we get about them, and the fact that it's Star Trek and, you know, episodic Star Trek of the past resets after every episode, mostly, mm-hmm. Then we know our heroes are going to be safe. So I think the Borg, good pick, because Borg TNG were scary. Like the conspiracy parasites, they were unknown. Mm-hmm. They were super powerful, and we didn't know what our heroes could do to beat them. So we met them first in Q-Who, and then that cliffhanger in Best of Both Worlds. I was like,
There is one thing within on-screen Trek that we still don't know, though. We still don't know their origin. It has been explained in the novels, the Destiny trilogy, which is amazing. But in on-screen Trek, it hasn't been explained. I don't know. I wonder if in Picard they might get to something about their origin. But it is one of those things where, at least on screen, you don't know why they exist or how they got this way. So I think there is still something to be explored there.
Well, for my second pick, I am going with this amazing villain who is the only villain who has taken the life of a main character.
Oh my goodness, Amy, who could this be?
And that would be Armus in The Skin of Evil.
Oh, you know, that's actually different than what I thought you were going to say, but go ahead.
Oh, well, did we lose another main character?
Well, it was because of Shinzon that Data died.
Oh.
That's where I thought you were going.
Oh, I totally forgot about that. Oh.
How could
it.
You forget about data?
Oh. Well, okay.
It's because Nemesis was such a terrible movie.
When I was making my list, I'm going chronologically. So hang on to that thought, Justin, because we will get there.
I figured Shinzon would be in there, but I thought that's where you were going. They killed the main character. Okay.
Oh my gosh. No, fine. I was thinking of Tasha in first season.
Okay.
Oh my.
Convince us why Armus is more of a villain than Shinzon.
Okay. Yeah. Well, because we did lose a main character, but now that point is null and void because I totally forgot about Data. But why I like Armus, again, because I feel that he's very complex. He was created by these aliens sloughing off all of their evil thoughts and putting and creating this right skin of evil. He had no other way to be than to be this villain, evil, sadonic, just, you know, want to see other people torture. Like, he didn't have a choice. For him, going back to that nature nurture, his nature defines who he is and he has no choice. And I like the episode in part because Troy has a large part to play with it. And Troy is trying to change, you know, and nurture him into making different choices. But because of who he is, he has no choice. He has to be who he is. And that is why I think he's a good villain. We do get a little bit of his backstory, you know, with how he was created. And he just lives up to who he is. So I chose Armus for my second villain. What do you guys think about that, Joe?
I like that. Good choice. It was on my honorable mentions list. Interesting choice in that he's one of the only villains that we see that are truly and purely evil. Like by that he is, as by his construction, he is just unadulterated evil. And I don't think any other villain in Star Trek is pure evil. I would go so far to say that I don't think evil exists in the world. Mm-hmm.
Ooh, that's a whole other topic you could take an hour talking about.
Yeah, I know, I'm aware. and because of that, I think a lot of the villains in Star Trek we see have some kind of seed of humanity within them that we try and find and exploit to bring them round and kind of solve the problem of the episode. But Armus doesn't have that. He lacks all humanity, has no compassion, by definition doesn't care. Mm-hmm. Is just following his kind of programming, so to speak.
Right. Justin, what do you think?
Yeah, it's a great pick. It was on my longer list as well. And I think, you know, people tend to think of Skin of Evil as that's the one where Tasha died. But like, if you look at it as an episode itself, I think it's a really great season one episode.
Me too.
I mean, because there's a couple of things that are going on. I mean, first there's the shock of Tasha dying and fairly early on in the episode, but there's also this being that through no fault of their own really was created as this evil construction and is just kind of lashing out and trying to find, you know, whatever it is that he can do to amuse himself or, you know, find something interesting because he's just been on that planet for so long. And there is that great, really great interaction with Troy where they're talking back and forth. And there's the part on the ship where they're trying to, you know, figure out how to deal with Armus. And I find that, you know, the memorial scene with Tasha is really moving as well. I think it's a great episode all around. And I think I'm trying to think, Joe, because it's hard to say with, you know, 700 plus episodes, like, is there not someone else or something else, some other character that's kind of like a pure expression of evil like this? But you may be right because
I think there's maybe one.
Yeah.
But it's on my longer list. Am I allowed to say it?
If it's on your longer list and not going to be your third choice, yes.
Yeah. I think Nagilum from Nagilum, where Silence has Lease. Has another kind of extra dimensional evil entity and toys with the crew.
Yeah, but I don't think he has a I think he does have a choice. I think Armus has no choice. His fiber, how he was created, you know, takes away that choice.
I think Nagelin's maybe closer to being like a Q type entity, super powerful, and just wants to, it just wants like a pet to play with, like a cat plays with a mouse or a ball of wool.
Yeah.
Cause disruption.
It's a good point, Amy. Maybe Nagelin has a choice where Armus really kind of doesn't, which is kind of tragic. Like,
it is.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay, so round three. Some of ours might be already given away, but Joe, what's your third pick?
Okay, I feel like Justin's going to say that's not a villain. However, I'm going to go with this next one. And I've chosen this character because Captain Picard rises to heights in terms of his acting skill that we see a few times throughout Star Trek, but it just gives me chills. So, and it's so measured and so thought-provoking and so resonant currently in the world in which we live that I love it. So I'm going to quote what Picard says, and you'll know exactly who it is.
I know who it is already, but go ahead.
Okay, fine.
No, Joe, give us the quote.
Okay, I'm going to go. So Picard says, "You know, there are some words I've known since I was a schoolboy. With the first link, the chain is forged. The first speech censured, the first thought forbidden, the first freedom denied, chains us all irrevocably. Those words were uttered by Judge Aaron Satie as wisdom and warning. The first time any man's freedom is trodden on, we're all damaged. I fear that today, then, he's cut off. By Rear Admiral Nora Satie in the drumhead."
Yep, that's exactly where I thought you were going.
Nice. Yeah.
That's a great pick.
She obviously has... She's coming from a place where she has good intentions, potentially, initially, where she wants to seek out some kind of cancer that she perceives as taking over the Enterprise. At the beginning of the episode, there's been an explosion that's nearly destroyed the warp core and blown up the ship. It turns out there's potentially a conspiracy going on and some inside actors that are in league with the Romulans. And she believes that there's something going on, and it leads her to believe that Captain Picard's in league with the Romulans. She's got this singular focus, and she doesn't want to believe anything else. The fact that Captain Picard has to kind of, he looks down at one point when he's on trial. He looks down and goes, and you can see in his eyes that he's made this decision to explain what's happening. And it's for that reason, the fact that he has to do that makes her even more villainous. And then she loses it at the end and says, "How dare you? You don't know who I am. And my father was a great man, and you who consort with Romulans." And she kind of breaks down at that point. And then the episode is pretty much over. But yeah, she's one of those people. She's human. She's coming from a good place, but it gets twisted and contorted and warped into her being a villain.
So. Yeah, I think that's a great choice. That was on my longer list as well. And definitely in that episode, it does start innocently enough. Oh, there's been this explosion. Let's see what's happened. And it quickly becomes for her a way to root out people who might disagree, or she's kind of paranoid and seeing all these conspiracies everywhere. And she definitely becomes villainous because she sweeps up Worf in it, who's believing and helping her out. And it's something that's very dangerous until Picard basically kind of exposes that. And there's another admiral there who just kind of has to end it. But I've always wondered about that episode. Has she just become mentally unstable and she's like seeing all of these things that aren't there? Or like, what do you think actually happens to her, Joe, that she's like this?
She's obviously reached the position of Rear Admiral for a reason.
She's retired at this point also. She's just come back for this investigation or something like
that. She obviously reached some kind of the heady heights of power within the Federation. She's obviously very legally savvy. She's obviously done very good work in the past. Is she, I don't know, is she maybe trying to live up to her father's legacy? and trying to break a big story.
I find that she has a bit of an ego problem because I feel like through all of her experiences and, you know, she has been given all of these honors, like she feels that she knows best. And to me, that speaks of ego.
Ego didn't occur to me. That's maybe a good point. It's that nature-nurture thing again. The way she's been nurtured through life and through her accomplishments and her kind of work with Starfleet and the Federation and becoming a Rear Admiral, then she's had power in the past. Has that power corrupted her beliefs and warped and twisted her into what she becomes in the episode?
Yeah, that she believes her successes.
Yeah, she believes there is a conspiracy where no conspiracy exists.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a really great episode. I do feel that if they had a little bit more time, one of the things that would have really added was if you got some more backstory to how she's come to this place or something in her past experience that's causing her to do this.
Mm-hmm. I'm sure Justin's going to tell us that it's been in a novel.
I can say that I have read Sati being in at least some short stories previous to this where she's an admiral and maybe even a novel where you're just kind of seeing her in a position of power and, you know, making order. But there isn't really an explanation that I've read so far about her behavior, although I've only read like a third of the novel. So there's a lot of still out there.
Awesome. I think she's maybe my favorite badmiral. You know, like every admiral that comes on, with maybe the exception of Admiral Nechayev, who isn't bad. I quite like Admiral Nechayev. I think her and Picard have a good relationship, but most of the other admirals are a bit bad or villainous. They have villainous qualities, let's say.
Maybe, although not so much Nakamura, I would say. He's only in a couple episodes, but he's not really doing anything too bad.
No,
he's just the messenger.
True, but it's coming. He's the admiral. He's in charge. Anyway, I was going to say that the Drumhead is one of my favourite episodes because of Picard and the way what he's given to say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Okay, Justin, your third and final pick.
I know for my third pick, I had played it up earlier as something that neither of you would pick, which I think has come
true. I'm excited.
And also something that's unusual. I will only give you one hint for you to guess. It's a villain that's been in 12 episodes and 2 movies of The Next Generation. Any guesses?
Duras sisters.
Nope.
Mm.
And you only get one guess, Joe.
12 episodes and 2 movies.
That's right.
Is it a whole race?
You guys aren't on the right track. Okay. Should I tell you what it is?
No. I want to guess.
Oh, okay.
Okay, one guess, One guess.
12 episodes, 2 movies. It's not Q, because Q wasn't in any movies.
No.
But he's been in a lot of episodes. It's not the Borg, because you've mentioned the Borg already.
No.
It's going to be some. It's not going to be a race or a person.
You've already had like 3 guesses.
No, I'm saying it's not going to be. I'm not guessing. Those weren't guesses necessarily. I'm saying it can't be these things. I'm ruling it out. By process of elimination, I will get to eventually.
Yeah, eventually. But okay.
That's the longest episode of Earl Grey ever.
I've had enough suspense. Wait, let me just give what
it'll
it
be
is
like
and see what you guys
it'll
think.
It'll be like a starship or something.
No, okay. No. All right. Let me give my third pick. So my third pick, because I think it causes so much trouble for our heroes across 12 episodes and 2 movies, is time travel and alternate timelines.
Oh my gosh.
Unacceptable selection. Please try
Unacceptable
again.
Selection?
Does this fit your original definition of how you define a villain?
No.
Justin?
Possibly not.
Okay, but continue.
Let me just list out the episodes and the movies, and then I will make my argument for you, which I will have to construct while I list out the episodes and movies. So, you see time travel and alternate timelines in We'll Always Have Paris, Time Squared, Yesterday's Enterprise, Captain's Holiday, A Matter of Time, Cause and Effect, Time Zero, Tapestry, Timescape, Parallels, Firstborn, All Good Things, Generations, and First Contact. Those are the 2 movies. So here's the thing. I know we've been talking about characters as villains, right? And they have an impact on, you know, one episode or a set of episodes. I think the Borg and TNG, you see them in Q Who and Best of Both Worlds, both parts, and Iborg and Descent. I think that's like 7 episodes in one movie or something like that. But I feel like time travel and alternate timelines are something in Star Trek that comes along and really messes with things, and you have to adjust to that. And it is, I see it sometimes as, some of it, it's a smaller part of the episode, but it is kind of a villain within the episode. I mean, something like First Contact, time travel makes it possible for the Borg to basically try to wipe out or kind of Borgify humanity centuries earlier. And if you look at something like yesterday's Enterprise, there's this alternate timeline that comes in, and it just messes with everything. And they have to take this huge risk in order to get out of that situation. And then, you know, Tasha goes back into the past and it creates Sela. So I think there are all of these like ramifications. And I think more than anything else within The Next Generation, it is that thing that has these negative consequences that our crew has to deal with. Now, it's not a character, it's not like an intelligence that's trying to do these things, but it's kind of like an aspect of the universe that is against them in all of these situations. So you guys may think that's silly, but it was one of the things I thought of, like, let me think outside of just specific characters and let me think of something that you have to deal with a lot in TNG and across Star Trek that gets you into some really difficult situations to get out of, and where your antagonist, like, is the situation that time travel and alternate timelines have gotten you into.
Wow, that is really thinking outside of the box. That's very interesting, and I can see exactly where you're going with it. I sort of like it. Joe, what do you think?
Okay.
Well, for my fourth pick, I'm going to
wait,
I'm going to choose,
what do you think of my
space travel? Because space travel has got our heroes into so much trouble. Why can't we have like Star Stay on Earth, which is this amazing TV show started in 1966 where people just...
I know you're trying to make fun of my pick.
Okay,
but,
I know.
But here's the thing. Like the space travel that you go through, sure, it can have dangers, but it's not like every episode that it's in, it has this negative impact that you have to deal with. Time travel and alternate timelines, every time that you encounter it in Star Trek, it is something that has adverse consequences.
Okay. No, it's not.
Let's think about TNG. It's not necessarily true, because in TOS there was that little thing where they time travel a little bit. But anyway,
and
I think within
TNG... The episode
TNG,
parallels, that's not tragedy. We just have to get back to the right one. It's not, you know, danger.
Parallels had no time travel in it,
That's
no, I'm saying time travel and alternate timelines.
Okay.
So Worf is traveling between all of these alternate timelines. But even within that one, it's possible, like, he's going between all of these timelines, and he's having this impact on some of these timelines that could be it. Well, it gets reset at the end, but like, he's having this impact on all of these different timelines, and there's a danger that he could never get back, and that could adversely impact the Enterprise. I mean, and also at the end, you get like all of these like alternate Enterprises, including this like tragic Riker that's had to deal with the Borg for so long. So it is this difficulty that you have to get out of, even in Parallels. There is a solution that they need to put into place for that. So
okay.
Joe doesn't agree. That's fine.
Yeah.
I agree that time travel is problematic in most of the times we see it on TV. However, I'm struggling with the definition of it being villainous.
And I think Justin is struggling with your definition of Jellicoe being a villain. So tit
so,
for tat, there we
least,
go.
At least my pick was a person.
Who says it has to be a person?
Well, no one.
You know? Time is the fire in which we burn, right?
Yes.
Why would you do that, Justin? That's like one of the only times it makes me cry. When like Captain Picard is looking at his photo album.
Yes.
And Troy comes in and it's like, oh, this is just deeply sad.
Yes.
You're a terrible person. You're a villain. Justin Ozer's a villain.
Me and Jellicoe. Well, listeners, you'll have to tell us if you like my pick or you think it's silly, or if you have an outside of the box pick of your own.
Don't like it. Don't like it.
Okay, so can we get to my third pick? Because I have been waiting this entire episode to talk about my pick.
Is it the warp drive, Amy? Transporters.
No, neither of those things have a negative impact in every episode.
Spatial anomalies.
Okay. All right. So, listeners, do you see what I have to deal with? Oh, okay. My third pick, I chose, and you probably already guessed because Justin figured it out way early, is Shinzon. And when I got that we were going to talk about villains, this was my first one that came to mind was Shinzon and Armus. Those two were like the two that popped out at me. And I love Shinzon because to me, he is the most sympathetic. And if you remember what I said, like my definition of a villain is that I should be able to relate to them and know their backstory. And we get this terrific backstory with Shinzon on why he was created, how he was created, this clone in order to take over and remove Picard and have him be his replacement. Like, it's so personable for Picard. And for him, and I love the back and forth because between Picard and Shinzon's nurture versus nature. Like, this is the whole reason, one of the reasons why I love Nemesis so much, because unlike Armus, Shinzon has a choice. He was created with the most evil of intent, but he still has a choice. And when they're talking and sharing dinner together and they look up to the stars and they're finishing each other's sentences, and Shinzon's trying to learn, were we always explorers? Well, no, I'm sorry, I could quote it forever, but like they're that back and forth, and Shinzon is deciding to make this choice, and he chooses to, you know, kill Picard and take over Earth, but you know, that's his choice. And I think it's just so relatable to talk about, you know, and even when Picard starts second guessing himself, and it's like, you know, if I was put in that situation, would I be like that? And it's Data who has to, you know, sort of snap him out of it and say, no, that's not who you are. I just find the whole dynamic between Shinzon and Picard so relevant, so important, so complex. I totally buy in why Shinzon wants to get to know Picard, and in the end, why he wants to kill Picard. Like, he doesn't want to play second fiddle. I mean, no one wants to. He doesn't want to be, you know, the echo to the voice. Like, oh, I just love Nemesis, yeah. And I think Shinzon is a great villain.
I'll just say briefly, like, I agree with you, Amy, and we've talked about Nemesis, and I do think that it's good. It has its problems, but Joe, I don't know if you've had a chance in your, you know, 10 episodes here to talk about Nemesis and Shinzon. So what do you think?
I like what you're saying, Amy. I'm going to rewatch Nemesis with what you've said in mind. I have a problem, and it's that problem where you're taken out of the storyline because of its unbelievability. And I don't think Tom Hardy was a good pick for Shinzon.
Oh,
he's an amazing actor, yes. I would have much preferred them to have used Patrick Stewart playing Shinzon, so playing against himself. Mm-hmm. And they could have done it quite easily. Yeah. With makeup, they could have, with CGI of the time, they could have made him look still like Picard.
Or Shinzon could have been aged to the point that Picard was at that point, so he basically looked the same.
Yeah.
Although I think that would have been traumatic for me to see like Picard basically kill his clone that looks exactly like him, you know, like impale
him.
Yeah,
I think I would have bought into it more, possibly. But I think in TNG we see pictures of Picard when he's like at the academy and he's got hair.
Yeah, that's mm-hmm. the only flaw. But as far as Shinzon as a villain, what do you think about the story? And
oh, he's like super villain. He's like Bond level villain, isn't he? He is, though.
Okay.
He wants to, there's something insidious about it. He wants to understand Picard, then destroy him.
Mm-hmm. And I think mm-hmm. in part because that's his, like, he's got this medical condition, right? Because of the fact that he's a clone, he knows he has to die. And in order to save himself, he must kill Picard. Like, to me, it's just so relatable and complex. I love it.
And in order for Picard to save himself, he must kill Shinzon, right? It kind of goes one way or the other.
He doesn't have to kill Shinzon.
Well, he's put into a position
where he has to. Because of Shinzon's actions,
In order to save himself, Shinzon has to extract whatever he needs from Picard, which would cause Picard's death.
So that's my third pick. So, listeners, share with us yours. Now, let's go quickly through your honorable mentions, what had to be cut. Joe?
So I've mentioned the Gilum from Where Silence Has Lease, an extra-dimensional entity who just wanted to... he kind of wanted a pet to play with and toy and torment. And then my next one is Kivis Fajo from The Most Toys, because he's intelligent. He captures data. He conspires to have it look like Data has died in a shuttlecraft explosion, but keeps him in his museum of things he wants to kind of have around, his kind of baseball cards and his rare paintings and things like that. The thing about Kivis Fajo is he's a bit of a psychopath. He's cold. He has no compassion, which is as close to evil as you will get when you're intelligent, but you still seek out to do these things. And then he kills his kind of second in command, his kind of love interest at the end. But he just does it, and there's a look on his face, brilliantly acted, but it's like, yeah, you're going to die now. And they're dead. So he's a total psychopath, a bit like Hannibal Lecter. I know he didn't eat anybody, but he's super intelligent and he's super psychotic, which makes him very scary from my point of view as a sane human being. I know I only want to kill the odd couple of people, but that scares me.
That's a great pick. We don't talk about that episode enough.
We haven't tended to, no. Yeah.
Good job. I like those picks, Joe. Justin, what's on your honorable mentions?
Well, an honorable mention that I had was the aliens in Schisms. So those are the ones that are taking people away during the night and doing some kind of experiments on them. So I have it on my honorable mention list because, like, you could see them as a villain because they're doing these terrible experiments, and I think at least one person dies and all of that. You don't find out in the episode what their motivation is. Sorry, I will go into the novels again. You do find out in a Titan novel called Sight Unseen, and you get to understand why they're doing this. But just within the episode, it's frightening. And I think that in a similar way to the Borg, like, you're not understanding why they're doing something, and it's kind of adversely affecting the crew. So that's one of the ones I thought about. What do you think?
No? I don't think they're a villain. I think there's curiosity. And how can you say that they're a villain when they're being curious and wanting to learn?
I mean, they're doing these experiments. Like, they severed Riker's arm and reattached it. I mean, how could they not know that that's bad?
Okay, so when you're wanting to learn about, like, mechanics and you take things apart and try and put them back together again, that's what they're doing.
But they're doing it to sentient beings.
But did they know they were sentient beings because they were from another kind of level of subspace, or what we would call normal space?
Right.
Subspace. I think they would.
Interesting. I think they were just scientists.
Interesting.
And they were just kind of seeing what was out there and playing around with it. But yeah, I would agree that they are super creepy. The scene on the holodeck where they're trying to recreate, that's one of the truly creepy, scary points in Star Trek. Like the table, and then this is like IKEA. It's like holodeck IKEA.
Okay, because you guys were skeptical about that pick, another one I had on my list is Ardra in Devil's Due, where she's taking advantage of this planet.
Yes.
Trying to say that she's like this devil figure. I mean, and she's really trying to just take advantage of people. Mm-hmm. Amy says yes. Joe says
that's not nice. That's villainous.
Although that episode did really scare me because I was brought up Catholic, and so with Catholicism, you're basically told that you have to behave or you're going to go to hell, and it's replete with images of kind of the devil and kind of. Damnation. So when Ardra kind of morphs into an image of like the human version of kind of Lucifer or Beelzebub or whatever he was or she was, that scared me as a teenager. I was like, I don't want to see that because
my kind of religious programming at the time was home. Like, oh, that's not something that's acceptable to my brain, so please take it away.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's I like that pick.
You have one?
Yes. Yeah, so my honorable mention, I really had to go back and forth between Goal Madrid and Dr. Soren. I love him in Generations, and why I like him as a villain is because he has a singular purpose. And I think it's just a warning to all of us to, you've got to open your eyes and, you know, don't get lost in the forest because you're looking at one tree. Like, he's so single-minded and just, I'm going to kill millions and this entire sun that's going to destroy life on planets, all because he wants to get back into the Nexus. Like, that singularity of, you know, mindedness scares me to death. And so that's why he's on my list. Uh-huh.
That's a good pick.
I like that pick. Although I really like Malcolm McDowell as an actor.
Yes.
I think not long before Generations, I saw Clockwork Orange for the first time. And it's just like Stanley Kubrick's just, it's not pleasant to watch in places.
It's a frightening movie.
Yes. So I think my brain just naturally tied in his character in Clockwork Orange and Dr. Soren to make him even more kind of terrifying. So yeah, good pick. Mm. And I think Clockwork Orange, yeah. Nice. I think the lighting in Generations has a lot to do with that, because it's kind of, this is the first time we've seen TNG on the big screen, and there's a darkness and a sinisterness to it that we've never seen before, which helps play along with his character.
Yeah. I love the lighting. Yeah. All right, guys. Well, we've had a very robust discussion, so let's get to your final thoughts. Joe, what are you thinking about this episode of Villains?
Even though we had like 2 hours to come up with our picks and research it, I think we did really well being kind of almost off the cuff. And it was a good, as you say, robust discussion, even though Justin's picks in some cases weren't so good.
Joe's picks in some places weren't so good.
But mine were perfect.
Yeah, Amy's were perfect, 100% all throughout. Good job, Amy.
Whatever. Yes, no, I really enjoyed this. It's kind of talking about bad guys is... It's something easy to talk about because there are so many in Star Trek. It's why our hero characters have so much work to do. And it's why Patrick Stewart gives such phenomenal performances in places. So yeah, I had such a great time.
Yeah, I think it was so fun. And when I was thinking about villains and, you know, going back to the definition of, I like them to be complex and that, you know, I can be able to relate to them. Like, it was interesting as I was thinking about villains, I came up with a lot of villains that, like I said at the beginning, like, they were placed that way. They were created in this situation because on sort of my extra long list, like Armus and Shinzon, I thought of Dr. Moriarty. You know, he was created in the holodeck to beat Data, or Lore. You know, he was created by Dr. Soon. This theme, and I thought, wow, that's really interesting why I keep going to these villains who were created and trying to overcome. And I think it goes back to that nature versus nurture. And so going through this discussion really has given me a lot to think about of our choices and what freedom we have to choose our own destiny. And who are we going to become? Are we going to become the hero, or are we going to become the villain? I think it's been a great discussion. Justin, what are your final thoughts?
Yeah, I wasn't sure when I proposed this just a few hours ago what you guys would think or if there'd be time to prepare, but I think we did come up with a lot of great picks. I think that oftentimes when I hear the word villain, I think about like the one-dimensional villains or the mustache twirling kind of like, I'm going to get you and I'm just evil. But I think we did find a lot where there are different aspects to the character that you can kind of a bit understand where they're coming from, even if their actions aren't justified, like, you know, Goal Madrid or the Borg or Armus, Shinzon, you know, Kivas Fajo, Soren. I mean, those are all characters I think that have some motivation or some reason for doing what they're doing, where they're really motivated and they don't care if it's something that might push the boundaries of morality or something that that's wrong. So I thought that was very interesting. Maybe I built up my pick about time travel and alternate timelines too much because it kind of fell flat, but oh well. I was probably trying to be too clever there. But yeah, I think, and we talked about nature versus nurture and some deeper discussion. So I love when we talk about these things where you start and talk about villains, but you get into talking about things we can relate to within our own humanity or trying to put ourselves into the shoes or the position of someone else and see if that could be us as well. I just love these kinds of discussions where we get into those topics.
Great. Well, listeners, be sure to let us know your top picks of villains of Next Generation. We'd love to hear what you have to say. So next week, we are going to do an amazing crossover with our Standard Orbit crew. Very excited. So we will talk about alternate realities and parallel universes. And again, this is going to continue our fan collection series because they've got some on the original series. And then we'll talk about the episodes on the Next Generation. Justin, do you have a list of those episodes?
I do have a list of those episodes. So
would you like to share them?
So on Standard Orbit, we will be talking about Alternative Factor, The Enemy Within, and Turnabout Intruder. That should be interesting. I'm not too much of a fan of any of those. But and then on Earl Grey, we'll be talking about Parallels, Frame of Mind. So those are the six episodes if you want to watch those over the course of the next week. So you can join in on the discussion that'll happen on Standard Orbit and then on Earl Grey.
And I'm sure we'll be watching them too and tweeting about them as we watch, so you can join in there. Yep. Well, it's been so much fun talking about villains of Next Generation, but that isn't the only thing we've been talking about here on the network. Here is what you might have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, The Ready Room.
Is this the supernatural Klingon episode? What is this going to be? And then it just turns out to go in, you know, go in and dig your own time crystals, State Park. I mean, it's like, okay.
Well, Larry, again, you know, you go in there and there's a basket type thing there, and you put in your 10 quatloos and you get 60 minutes to dig your time crystal.
Dar-6. Yeah.
Yeah, actually, the Klingons want Dar-6, don't they?
Yeah, yeah.
And you go in, and actually, however many time crystals you can dig in 60 minutes, you get to keep. But the catch is, they're time crystals. So 60 minutes to one person is only a minute to someone else.
Literary Treks.
We have the conversation between Pike and the Starfleet Admiral Terrell about the specifics of why they were kept out of the war. This is even before we're in a situation where they have no choice but to stay out of the war. They couldn't go back if they wanted to. By, you know, sort of setting up the milestones in the story for this is about when this is happening during season one, you know, that allows us to tell our own independent story within that. But yet also you'll always know where you are in the regular TV show.
Earl Grey.
That question about whether life exists, either yes, it does, because like enough time has elapsed and there's enough planets out there, or no, it doesn't, because we are that race.
Oh.
That seeds life elsewhere in the universe at some point.
The other
in the
answer is it did, but they all destroyed themselves, you know. But that's also kind of unlikely that you'd have lots of civilizations all doing the same thing and destroying themselves, I think. But
to the journey!
And the seven
That's all
nine
I could think about with that
this
one.
This is the Seinfeld in space episode.
I keep waiting for Elaine to show up.
I'm trying to think of what Jerry Seinfeld would say in Jerry Seinfeld's tone of voice inside this episode. Can you do a good Jerry Seinfeld?
Oh, good grief, no. Not even close.
I'm trying to think how I would approach doing a Jerry Seinfeld impersonation. It's not coming to me. He's got that super high-pitched da-da-da-da-da kind of, I don't know, kind of voice.
Well, that you did really well, the da-da-da-da-da. So, yeah, there you go.
Why don't they just warp out of here?
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
Check check out all these shows and join the conversation about your favorite corner of the Star Trek universe and beyond. You'll find us wherever you get your podcasts. If you're an Apple user, be sure to hit the subscribe button in Apple Podcasts on iPhone, iPad, or Apple TV, or the desktop iTunes app to get the latest episodes as soon as they are published. And please leave us a star rating and written review. That helps others to find the show, and you can be entered into our drawing for those amazing collectible cards. If you've gotten this far in the episode and you still haven't given us a star rating and written review, hit pause, do that review, and then come back because we're going to have some fun bonus stuff in a minute.
If you're not an Apple user, we've got you covered as well. You can find our shows on Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, Spreaker, SoundCloud, YouTube, Windows Phone, and most third-party apps, and you can stream and download the MP3 file from our website or grab the RSS link.
We'd love to hear your thoughts on today's show, and there are many ways for you to do that. The best place to join in the larger conversation is the Babel Conference, our listeners group on Facebook. Just type Babel, B-A-B-E-L, into the search field on Facebook, and it should come right up.
Okay, you guys want a bonus question?
Yes, I want a bonus question.
It's Joe's favorite part. All right, so we've talked about villains in TNG, our top picks. What is your one top pick for a Star Trek villain outside of TNG? Joe?
Okay, so one top pick is becoming two because...
No, one only.
Because of time travel.
Okay, fine.
So, recently, the two-parter season two of The Orville with the robot people, I thought that was spectacularly good.
Crisis.
Yes, what's the race called again?
The Kalon.
Kalon, yeah, that was best of both worlds level good. That episode. So recently for them, that one.
Star Trek, please.
What?
I said your pick for a villain in Star Trek, but outside of TNG.
Oh, I thought you meant
No.
Did I mishear you? I misheard you. Sorry. Okay.
But that's still a good pick. Thanks for bringing in the Orville.
Thank you. And you can listen to Amy on Discoville. In the Fandom Podcast Network. My outside Star Trek pick was going to be the Harkonnen from the Dune series by Frank Herbert. Okay, so outside Dominion.
The Dominion is a villain, okay. An entire race. Well, an entire group of races, really, yeah.
True.
That's a good one.
I like Jeffrey Combs anytime he plays anything on Star Trek, but specifically him as Wayun. Yeah. Just that... calculated way that he has,
and he speaks so smoothly. I can't even imitate him, but it's like such a smooth way of talking, but there's just like such malice underneath it.
That's what that is. It's malice. Yeah.
Oh, great pick. What do you think, Amy?
Oh gosh, this is really hard because I just know Next Gen so well. Now I've been watching Deep Space Nine. So there's got to be some villains there. Oh, yeah. I don't like that lady changeling.
Oh, the female changeling?
The female
That's
changeling.
That's a good villain.
Yeah, I don't like her.
Played by Salome Jens, who is the same actress that played the species, the seeded all life in the galaxy in The Chase.
Yep.
Oh, yeah. Hmm. Yeah, I just saw a photo of that. And I was like, hey, that's the female changeling.
Well,
I'm going to have a third pick.
No, Joe, it was just one, and like 3 hours.
No, I know it's just one,
Joe,
but I really like them.
And
Voyager. No, I'm unvetoing. I pressed the unveto button.
It'll take longer to deny it, so go ahead.
Yes, well, those guys in Voyager that were kind of phased and cloaked, and they were going around.
Oh my God, I just watched that the other day. That's in Scientific Method. Those guys are, well... I say guys, but it's a race, and you see male and female scientists. Yeah, they're out of phase, and they're doing these horrific experiments on the Voyager crew. But that's interesting because that happens because there's something going on, like on their own homeworld or in their empire or whatever, where there's some disease, so they need to do research on Voyager's crew. But yeah, that's it's creepy.
It's insidious.
But that's a great pick, Joe.
Justin, what's your pick then?
Well, I'm going to have another DS9 pick. And not only is it my pick for the best villain outside of TNG, but I think in all of Star Trek, this is the best villain.
I think I know what you're going to say.
Yeah, you probably do. It's Gul Dukat.
Yeah.
Because, like, I think he's such a great villain because you get to see him across a number of episodes in all seven of the seasons. And he's someone, you know his history. Like, before, he was this... terrible prefect who was working Bajorans to death and all that kind of stuff and trying to suppress the resistance. That's like his backstory already. And then he comes in and he's kind of always kind of hovering around. And then he sometimes he's really helpful. Sometimes he helps Sisko and the crew. Sometimes he's doing something that's like threatening to destroy or take over DS9, or, you know, toward the end of the show, he gets really crazy. But I think he's the best villain because there's so much complexity in how he is season by season, and that he's even someone who is actually helpful to them sometimes, especially in the first couple of seasons. So I think there's more complexity to him than any other villain in Star Trek. So that's my choice.
I absolutely agree, because when I started, you know, my watch / rewatch, and the first few seasons, I'm like, why do people hate him? He's being nice. He's helped him here. He's helped him there. But yeah, I get what you're saying.
And what's really interesting is fans got that impression too. There were like fan letters coming in to the show, like that they were in love with Gul Dukat, right? And I think like the writers were like, oh, okay, that he's supposed to be a really bad person. We made him like too charming, so they kind of took it in another direction for him to be somewhat more evil. But yeah, you get that impression like, oh, maybe he's had this past, but he's reforming and all of that. Until they took it in a different direction. So he's very interesting and unusual for a Star Trek villain in that way. Yeah,
that's a really good pick. Him and Kai Winn. Yeah. You know what? That kind of double act from season 7.
I have some complex feelings about Kai Winn, actually, because I think that she does have all of these things where, I mean, she's a little bit like Wyoon, like there's malice beneath her words, but she was also somebody who suffered a lot during the resistance, and you get these glimpses into her being possibly a good person, and that she's doing all of these things because she wants to connect with the prophets. And anyway, I think that she's a little bit more complicated. I actually love seeing Winn because I think she's so kind of like deliciously like bad in some of those episodes, but that's a good pick too.
Well, she is. Yeah.
Well, we've talked a lot.
Well, I'm glad you didn't ask about villains in our real life, because I had a couple of ex-boyfriends ready to blast.
Oh, wow.
So that's good.
That'll have to be the bonus question for next time, maybe. Well, if you'd like to send us an email, you can use the form on our website at trek.fm/contact. Choose to send to a show and select Earl Grey. That will come right to us, and we might read your email on the show. You can also find the network on Twitter at trekfm and on Facebook at facebook.com/trekfm. So, Amy, where can people contact you when you're not thinking about how important Shin Zan is as a villain?
Oh, he is so important. Well, you can contact me or listen to me here on the network, where I am on The Edge, which is about Star Trek Discovery with my good friend Patrick Devlin. I am on Twitter at Miss Amy Nelson, and I am right there in the Babel Conference. So, Joe, where can people contact you when you're not being controlled by a conspiracy parasite?
Well, I am at the moment. So people can get me at the other side of the Milky Way galaxy, where I'm readying my invasion fleet to come to Earth and kind of infect you all. You can get me on the Babel Conference. You can get me on Twitter at JoeyJoe77UK. Or you can email me, where I will guarantee you a personal response, joepodcasts@gmail.com. Time traveling, not your when you contact. People can wear just an and.
You're doing that backwards. Wow, I am impressed.
He time traveled. Yeah.
He was just saying things backward while still going the same direction of time that he usually... But anyway.
Calling it time travel, it's evil.
So, when I'm not thinking about that and trying to decipher all of Joe's words that he sends to me backwards all the time, you can find me on Twitter. I'm at TrekFan4747, where I tweet about nothing but Star Trek. You can find me hanging around the Babel Conference on Facebook. Oh, yes, and you can also find me elsewhere on the network co-hosting The Line. That's our Star Trek Picard podcast with my friends Chrissy Zalagi and Brandon Shane Matala. We're having a lot of fun talking about Picard and preparing for that series that is really, yes, coming next year. And when that is out, we will talk about each episode as it airs. If you'd like to help us keep all our shows coming to you each week, you can become a patron of the network on Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm. That's patreon.com/trekfm to get all the details. Perks include early access to episodes, exclusive content, producer credits, and more. Available through our special patrons website, the Patron Zone. It requires a great deal of money to produce, host, and distribute these shows each month. We really appreciate any support you can give us and hope you'll join the team. Again, you'll find all the details at patreon.com/trekfm.
We'd like to take this opportunity to recognize our current associate producers, Norman Lau, Justin Ozer, Michael Huter, Thomas Appel, Chris Tribuzio, Jim McMahon, and me, Joe Keegan. Thank you for supporting Trek FM and especially Earl Grey.
So join us next time for another cup of Earl Grey.
Jellicoe is not a villain.
I've brought down bigger men than you, Picard.
Great joy and gratitude.